Our topic tonight that I was assigned is a great one. It's one that I think is on the minds of all of us in this room. It's on the minds of people everywhere. And it's the question of happiness. Every single one of us yearns for, desires, wants, and spends our lives in the pursuit of happiness. We just want to be happy. It's all we want. The end of a long day at work, with all that we have on our head, with all the pressures, with all the anxieties, with everything going on, with our health, with our what, all we want is to be happy. And yet, as much as we want happiness, as hard as we work to try to attain it, it seems so elusive. It seems so difficult to hold on to grasp. It seems like it's always running away from us. Why is it that almost everyone we meet, everyone wants to be happy, and it seems almost everyone we meet is terribly unhappy? Hey, so-and-so, how was your day? Not bad. Not terrible. Can't complain. Have you ever asked someone, how's your day? Say, great. It was a great day. I'm so happy. It's one in a million you meet somebody like that. Do you know that in the last 15 years in America, antidepressant sales have gone up by more than 1,000%? In the last 15 years, with all of technology, with the iPhones and iPods and iPads and with your BlackBerry and with your this gadget and that gadget and nicer cars, and now your seat in the car is air conditioned or heated and you're everything you could ever want, and your wife could have a different temperature for her seat than your seat, and you have every luxury in the world you could ever want. With all the luxuries in the world, and remember 15 years ago we actually had money. I'm not talking over the last 5 years. You can remember the 15 years ago people had money and a house and a job. And still, in the last 15 years, antidepressant sales, sales of antidepressant drugs, have gone up more than 1,000%. Everyone wants happiness. In 2006, Harvard psychologist Daniel Gilbert wrote a book that he called Stumbling on Happiness. And the thesis of his book, which I don't highly recommend, is essentially that as badly as we all want happiness, stop pursuing it, because what you think will bring you happiness likely won't. And when you think will never make you happy, just may. So the reality, he says, is most people just stumble on happiness. You're lucky, you're fortunate if you happen to stumble on happiness. I couldn't disagree with this thesis more. I couldn't disagree more. And I want to share with you tonight, what I want to spend our time doing, is sharing three different perspectives, attitudes, three different things that we can do to find that elusive happiness. Because we all just want to be happy. And I think that these three things are three keys towards happiness. There's a million keys. Everyone has their own. But these are three that I think Judaism provides and have been tried and tested for millennia, for centuries, as being able to provide happiness. There was a 26-year study of over 60,000 people. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And listen to some of the findings that they found about happiness. One finding is, quote, women whose partners give high priority to family goals are significantly happier than women whose partners give family matters low priority. They needed 26 years? Ask any woman 26 seconds, she'll tell you. Another finding. Working too little is worse than working too much, but not having work at all is worst of all. 26 years. Wow. They found that being with someone who is neurotic has a substantial effect on life satisfaction and doesn't get better no matter how long one is married to that neurotic person. So far, this study doesn't add much to our question. How do you find happiness? And really, happiness is something that everybody's looking for. So if I ask you, what brings happiness? And they take all these surveys and they ask people, what provides happiness? So very often, towards the top of the list is money. If I only had money, I'd be happy. If I only had money. I don't have money, and that's the source of all of my problems. If I only had money, I'd have happiness. Other people will say, power. I'm powerless. I'm so insecure. I have no self-esteem. I have no power. If only I had power. If I had fame. If I was a celebrity. Oh, then I'd be happy. So I ask you, the people who have money, who have fame, are they happy? Every day you turn on the news, every day you go on the internet and you read about another one of them who have all the money, all the fame, all the power, all the celebrity in the world, and they're arrested, and they're in rehab, and they're addicted. Why is that? Why is that? So I'll tell you an unbelievable secret. Because you see, if you don't have money, you could spend your entire life pursuing money and think, you know what, someday if I could get it, then I would be happy. And you could hold on to that dream. You could hold on to what really is an illusion. But what happens if you attain that money, that fame, that fortune, that power, and now you're still not happy? You realize, well, what's left? If that's what defined your happiness, and you have it and you're still not happy, then you're going to numb yourself by turning to crack cocaine, pot, alcohol, shoplifting, or whatever the celebrity scandal of the week may be. So clearly those are not the prescription for happiness. Because the people who have money statistically are not happier. In fact, I would argue that people with more money, I don't mean a comfortable living, but people with great wealth are not happier than the people in poverty. People with fame and fortune and power are not happier than those who are anonymous and no one knows. And they're powerless and impotent. So what brings happiness? Number one, the first message I want to share with you tonight, and it's not my message, the first message that the Torah, that I believe Judaism, wants to share with you tonight. And that is that happiness is not an emotion. Happiness is not an emotion. Happiness is a decision. Happiness is not an emotion. Happiness is a decision. What do I mean by that? You see, if you think happiness is an emotion, then you're going to sit and wait for it. Because emotions happen to us. I become filled with a sense of rage or anger or love. I get filled with jealousy or satisfaction. If happiness is an emotion, then I feel like I'm not in control. I'm waiting for it to take over me. And I'll spend my life waiting and pursuing that emotion. But happiness is not an emotion. Happiness is a decision. And starting tonight, this Tuesday night, we could start to decide to live a life of happiness. There's a verse in the Torah and the Bible that describes all kinds of blessings. The Bible's filled with laws, the Bible's filled with stories, the Bible's filled with morals and ethics and teachings, the Bible's filled with all kinds of incredible things. Take our Tanakh B'Shana, take our program, you could finish the entire Jewish Bible in 1 year. Become literate in the major personalities and the places and the things. So the Bible's filled with an incredible array of things. So the Bible has, in a number of places, a list where God says, here are the blessings. Live a virtuous, meritorious, meaningful, purposeful life, and here are the blessings I'm going to give you. So listen to this verse. I'm going to read it in the Hebrew and translate it. Uvohu kol habrachos ha'ele v'hi sigucha. The Bible tells us in the fifth book, the book of Deuteronomy, all of these blessings, all the blessings I just listed, if you merit, you'll get all of these blessings, v'hi sigucha, and they will overtake you. Overtake you? What does that mean? What is this last blessing? The end of a long list of blessings. Imagine I say to you, I give you a long, Jeff, you should have a long life, good health and happiness and prosperity and joy and success in all that you do. And most of all, achieve the blessings. I'm going to achieve the blessings. I just gave you the list of the blessings. Why does the final blessing achieve the blessings? V'hi sigucha in the Hebrew. What does that word come to add? And the Bible commentaries debate the Sforno, one of the medieval commentaries, the Rav Avadya Sforno gives his answer, others give their answers. But there is a commentary written by a rabbi, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. He lived in the 1900s, he lived in the 20th century. And he provides an incredible answer, an answer that I think gives us a great insight into what happiness is, into our pursuit, into how we can achieve it. He says that in fact, I don't need the Bible to list blessings. If I woke up this morning, I'm blessed. I've done funerals for people who didn't wake up in the morning. If you woke up this morning, if I woke up this morning, if my contract has been renewed for another day, then I'm blessed. If that's all that happened, doesn't matter what's going to happen at work or with my kids or at family or what's happening. If I woke up today, that's a blessing. Now if I get out of bed and I put my feet on the ground and my two legs are working, that's a blessing. And if I make my way to the bathroom, which for many is the first stop after getting up in the morning, and I'm able to eliminate, I'm able to relieve myself, something we all take for granted, ask someone with a catheter the meaning of going to the bathroom, the ability, and they'll tell you never, ever take it for granted. So that little thing that we're not thinking about, we're just taking care of first thing in the morning, where we go to the bathroom, a little flush, and we didn't think about it, that's a huge blessing. If God forbid that clogs up, that doesn't work, God forbid a person needs a catheter, you're hospitalized, your bladder infection, you'll appreciate then what a blessing is. And we could go through the entire day. Our lives are filled with unbelievable blessings. But you know what the biggest problem is? We fail to notice it. We fail to stop and acknowledge and recognize and think about and focus on the blessings. I get in my car, so you know what I think about? It's not as nice as the guy in the car at the red light next to me. And what I didn't think about is, I'm sitting in a box with wheels that can go 60 miles an hour. What a miracle. That's unbelievable. Can get me from point A to point B. I'm living in miraculous times. What a blessing. I wake up in the morning and I'm in my house, and as I shut that front door, too many of us think, it's not as nice as that house down the block. But we don't think, oh my God, I have a roof over my head. I am so blessed. And if we have our health, and if we're married, and if we have children, and if we have family, and if we have a job, and if we have whatever we have blessing. And so the Bible, the Torah, the greatest blessing it bestows is the blessing of appreciating our blessings. Because if you have all the blessings in the world, but you don't sense it, you don't acknowledge it, you don't appreciate it, then you have nothing. You might as well be cursed. Because there are cursed people. There are people who have so much and they see nothing. All they see is what they don't have. And so what they have is doesn't serve as a blessing in their lives. In fact, it's a curse that causes them to be jealous and angry and depressed. The greatest blessing the Bible could offer is the blessing of seeing our blessings. Is the blessing of appreciating what we have. Because when you see the blessings, however minimal, small, however seemingly insignificant, whatever they are, and there's something, if you see the blessings, you can't help but to automatically and inevitably be filled with a sense of joy, with a sense of happiness. Tom was driving, and he was late for a meeting in Manhattan. And he needed to get to this meeting on time. It was a job interview. It was critically important. So he's going in circles. You know what it's like finding a parking spot in Manhattan. And he's going in circles. And finally he says, you know, God, help me find a parking spot. And God, I'm going to be the most moral, ethical. I'm going to be so charitable. I'm going to be the best. I'm never going to gossip. I'm never going to cheat on my income taxes. God, just help me find a parking spot. I'm late for this interview. I need your help. God, please. And just then he's pulling in front of the building of his interview. And a guy pulls out. So, parallel parks, don't remember what that is if you're in Florida, but if you're from New York, you remember what that is. Parallel parks, he pulls into the space, and he looks up and he says, God, never mind, thanks, I found one. So how often in life, like Tom, are there blessings that happen to us that we pray to God, we give anything in the world for? And then when it happens, we say, no, thanks God, never mind, got pregnant without you, we're good. Found my spouse, I'm all good to go. Got my job, cashing my paycheck, I'm good. Got that roof over my head, got that car, thanks God, but I'm good. We're all good. We just take it for granted. Well, yesterday we were praying we'd give anything in the world for. So here's the magic formula. This is secret number one to happiness. Happiness is not an emotion. It's a decision. It's a decision to look at what you have in your life that can be a source of happiness, that can be a source of joy, of optimism, of being hopeful. You see, if your entire life, if our entire lives are spent thinking about what we don't have, if the source of my happiness is attaining something I don't have, then can I ever really be happy? Because by definition, I can never really have everything. There will always be something. I got the iPhone, but I didn't get the iPhone 4S. I got this, but I don't have the latest version. The house is that, but it could be more square feet. I got this, but it's not enough. If our happiness is determined by what I don't have, then by definition, I will never be happy, because by definition, there will always be something I don't have. But if my happiness is defined by what I have, then I will always be happy, because I always have something. Doesn't matter who you are, what your struggles are in life, there is something There's something. If you woke up in the morning, there is something. So if your happiness is defined by what you have, then you have the power. It's in your hands. It's your choice to be happy. The Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, it's published by the American Psychological Association, had a study sharing all these studies of what brings happiness. So their study, they recorded that money is at the absolute bottom of the list. Their study, they studied Illinois lottery winners, and they found that a year after winning the lottery, millions of dollars, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, a year after winning the lottery winners were no happier. 0% happier than they were before they won the lottery. Money is not what brings happiness. You know what the study found, American Psychological Association? Study found that people need to believe that they were autonomous and competent, to have self-esteem, to feel a sense of closeness with others. And interestingly, you know what ranked very high providing happiness? Regular attendance at houses of worship. Regular attendance. Now that's not a plug to get you to come to our shul. We'd love to have you Friday Night Live. We'd love to have you at the synagogue. I'm not trying to, you know, manipulate you to come here by telling you it's what brings happiness. But think about it. What do you do when you come to a house of worship? You express gratitude. You focus on what you have to be thankful for. You pray for others who need even more than you. You can't help but recognize, wow, I have a lot. And by thinking about what you have, you can't help but be happy. And so number one is to make the decision to be happy. The decision. I'm going to put a smile on Rabbi Brody's face right now. I'll tell you how. Not just it's taking a picture, but can you just put a little hair on top? That would make me happy if I could grow. If I could grow more hair, that would be. If only I had more hair. What I don't have, I should just be happy for the little bit in the back, I guess. So there's a great rabbi. He teaches in a yeshiva in a Jewish academy in Baltimore. His name is Rabbi Frand. He happens to be Rabbi Brody's rabbi. He taught Rabbi Brody. So a bunch of years ago, as the recession was kicking in and people's portfolios were dropping, net worth were dropping, misery was on the rise, I asked Rabbi Frand. I said, you know, I'm a rabbi. I feel a lot of pressure to try to inspire people to be happy, to be optimistic, to focus on the good. And look at the culture, the climate, the environment that we're in. Everybody's miserable. What can I do? So you know what he told me? I thought this great Rabbi Frand is going to refer me to sections of the Talmud, sections of the Bible. He's going to refer me to verses. He's going to give me... You know what he said to me? He said the most simple and yet most profound piece of advice. He said, Rabbi, the best thing that you can do to help others is smile. Smile. Because he said, if you smile and project happiness, it can't help but impact other people. They're going to smile as well. If you stay upbeat and positive, you're optimistic and hopeful, it will dispel the negativity. Because if a person's miserable and bitter and they walk up to you and you've got this big smile, you're going to have the impact on them. They're not going to have the impact on you. So he said to me, the best thing in the world you can do is smile. And that's part of the decision to be happy. Part of the decision to be happy is a decision to exhibit happiness. To wear a smile on your face. To not be so miserable. I know it's not like part of the Jewish stereotype to be happy. But that's okay. We can break the Jewish stereotype. It's okay to be happy. It's legit. Even the Torah says it's okay. I'll tell you another study. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, a physician at Harvard Medical School, he authored a study that found that happiness is contagious. Isn't that amazing? You know how if you yawn, you ever watch this? Hopefully not during one of my classes, but someone else is speaking, sometimes you'll notice. One person yawns and it sets off this chain of people yawning. Right. Yawning has scientifically been proven to be contagious. So guess what else is? Smiling. This Harvard professor did a study that proved that smiling is contagious. If you smile, other people will smile. I'm not going to share with you the details of the data. But the point is, make the decision to be happy, and you know what? You'll find that you're happy. If you sit back waiting in life to feel happy, the likelihood is you'll never feel happy. If you spend your life thinking, happiness depends on something I don't have, then you'll never be happy because there'll always be something you don't have. But if happiness is defined by what I do have, if happiness is a decision, not an emotion. If v'hisi gucha, the Torah, the Bible's greatest blessing, the greatest blessing that anyone can bestow is the blessing of feeling blessed, of seeing the blessings. Act, exhibit, behave happy, and you will be happy. Dr. Lemberg was here. You go to our new website, which went live an hour ago. Be among the first to see it. It's phenomenal. brsonline.org. In the featured video on the homepage of our new website, which is being broadcast around the world, is a conversation with Dr. Lemberg. Because he shares his incredible story, his unbelievable story of how he embraced Judaism. Now you'll have to go and watch it. brsonline.org. He shares his unbelievable story. So I'm not going to do a disservice to his story, but let me just quote a little bit. Because Dr. Lemberg tells the story about at 13 years old, as an inspired young Jewish man, he went to the synagogue, to his temple, for a Yom Kippur service, and he goes with a friend of his, and they're sitting in their seats, comfortable, and they've got their big, thick prayer book open, waiting for Yom Kippur, inspired, young, 13-year-old Jewish guys. And someone comes over to them and says to them, the words that are the greatest turnoff in Judaism, show me your tickets. So he says, tickets? You know what they say, the most common repeated words in Orthodox synagogue are, you're in my seat. Those are the foremost two. So they say to Dr. Lemberg and his friend, where are your tickets? He says, I don't have tickets, but I don't know if you noticed, I'm 13 years old. I said my bar mitzvah, I'm excited to be here. I says, I don't really care how old you are, I don't really care how excited you are, no tickets, you can't stay, kicks him out. And 30 years? 35 years? 20 years? Even longer? I know, but you look like you're 25. I'm trying to help you out here. So, for a few years, Dr. Lemberg doesn't come back to the synagogue till Yom Kippur last year, and he gets dragged by a friend who says, come, you got to come to this service, Rabbi Brody. He says, Yom Kippur, all I remember about Yom Kippur, everyone has long faces, everyone seems so depressed, it's such an unhappy thing. I don't know. They drag him there, he takes one look at Rabbi Brody, someone points and says, there's the rabbi. He says, there's the rabbi. I can't be the rabbi. He smiled. I never met a rabbi in my life who smiles. There's no way he could be the rabbi. And because of that smile, look at Dr. Lemberg, watch that interview, see what's happening in his life. A smile is the most powerful thing. Because when we exhibit and exude happiness, you know what happens? We feel happy. And when we feel happy, you know what happens? It becomes contagious and other people feel happy. Let me read to you an incredible poem. It enriches those who receive without impoverishing those who give. It happens in a flash and the memory of it lasts forever. None are so rich they can get along without it, and none so poor but are richer for its benefits. It creates happiness in the home, fosters goodwill in a business, and is the countersign of friends. It is rest to the weary, daylight to the discouraged, sunshine to the sad, and nature's best antidote for trouble. Yet it cannot be bought, begged, borrowed, or stolen, for it is something that is no earthly good to anybody till it is given away. If someone is too tired to give you a smile, leave one of yours, for nobody needs a smile so much as those who have none to give. That's the power of a smile. Think about what it could do. Wall Street Journal, I think yesterday, had a story about people, I don't know if anyone saw the story, the Wall Street Journal. People who go to work, and whether they come in with a smile or they're depressed, has an impact on the productivity and profitability of the company. They measured. When employees walk in the door, their mood, if they're happy versus if they're sad, it's not rocket science, but has an impact literally measurable on the bottom line of how the company does because it's contagious. So that's lesson number one. Happiness is not an emotion, it's a decision. Decide to be happy. The Bible's greatest blessing is the blessing of feeling blessed. See the blessing in your life and make the decision. Number two is a message that if you've been attending the synagogue recently, you've heard me talk about, and I apologize if it's repetitive to you, and that is something which is counterintuitive. That happiness, joy, comes not from getting, but it comes from giving. See, most people intuitively think, give me, I'll be happy. Give me $1 million. Give me a good golf game. Give me a little more hair back on top of my head. Give me a great mind and a great memory. Give me my... Give. If you were to give me as the recipient, I would feel happiness. But that's actually not the case. It's actually the opposite. Happiness comes not from getting. Happiness comes from giving. And you know why that is? Because the greatest happiness that we can feel in life is to realize, is to feel, is to be aware that we are tapping into something so much greater than ourselves. That we are tapping into something so much more than just the here and now, the immediate, what I see before me, the physical, material world which is fleeting. Happiness comes from recognizing there's something greater. Lasting happiness is by tapping into something greater than myself. You know, they call Disney World the happiest place on earth. That's Disney's brilliant, brilliant marketing line. The happiest place on earth. It's its tagline, so that when you cross the gate into Disney, you don't think about what it just cost you to get into Disney. And when you're leaving, you're not thinking about how many souvenirs and what you just paid for a bucket of popcorn and a cup of soda. But they told me this is the happiest place on earth. You're trying to feel happiness. But in Disney, the rides are thrilling, and the shows are entertaining, and the displays are amazing. But the truth is that the happiness that you feel at Disney is fleeting, and it's transitory. For kids, it's over by the time you're back in the car going to the hotel, and they're crying and fighting and screaming and tired and miserable. For parents, it's over. For me, it's when we're pulling into the parking lot. But the latest it's over is when your credit card bill comes. The happiness of the happiest place on earth, Disney, is fleeting, transitory, temporary. It's not real happiness. Because it's the here and now. It's that ride. It's that show. It's that souvenir. Real happiness is feeling, I am part of something greater than myself. Real happiness is feeling, there's a creator. There's a God. He loves me. I love Him. And when I imitate Him, when I fulfill my purpose in existence, which is to be godlike, to make a positive impact on the world around me, then there's nothing that can bring greater happiness than that. I tell you, we're going to read it in a couple weeks in the Torah portion. Abraham, a great patriarch, Abraham, is sitting outside his tent. You know, Abraham would never have lived in a gated community in Boca Raton, Florida, because his tent was open on all four sides. Abraham loved hosting guests. Loved it. Abraham did a remarkable thing. He circumcised himself at an advanced age. That's a serious operation. That's a serious commitment to God. So it's day three after the circumcision. Doctors will tell you that day three can be the most painful in the recovery process, in the healing process. He's sitting outside his tent, and God comes to visit him. God can't just tell us to go visit the sick and not do it himself. So the Bible tells us, we're going to read in a couple of weeks, the Torah tells us, the Chumash tells us, that God comes to visit Abraham. And they're having a conversation. And God's in the middle of talking to Abraham. Abraham's talking to God, whatever you talk to God about. And he catches out of the corner of his eye three Arab wanderers, three nomads walking through the desert. And they look parched. They look thirsty. They look hungry. So you know what Abraham does? He interrupts his conversation with God. Sorry, God. God, excuse me. I got something I got to take care of. And he goes to say to these three wanderers, can I offer you a drink, something to eat, wash your feet, put your feet up? So the commentaries say, one second, what's going on here? And the commentaries conclude, Rashi, the great biblical commentator, says, we learn from here, Gadol hachnasas orchem mekabalas pnei hashchina. It is greater to welcome guests. It is greater to be hospitable. It is greater to be kind and charitable than it is to be talking directly, having a conversation with the Almighty Himself. So I ask you, does that make sense to you? The Almighty, God, the Creator of the universe. You're having a conversation with Him. Three hungry nomads? What? It's greater to host somebody? Couldn't Abraham say to them, hey buddies, just find a piece of sand to sit on, relax yourselves, I got to finish this conversation. What's going on? So I heard once the most magnificent explanation. If we have a choice between talking to God or imitating God, imitating God wins. Because the purpose of life is not to talk to God. Of course it's to talk to God, but that was a very selfish thing at that moment, to talk to God. That was filling Abraham's needs. Abraham felt great talking to God. But if there's a conflict, if there's a choice, whether to talk to God or to be like God, the answer is be like God. The greatest source of happiness is not that next shopping spree, is not that purchase, is not the massage and spa treatment. The greatest source of happiness is not shooting your low score in golf, although that is a very happy moment. The greatest source of happiness is imitating God, is feeling that you're part of something much greater than yourself, is making a difference in the world. You see, what social scientists are only beginning to realize now is that counterintuitively, the biggest obstacle to happiness, to achieving happiness, is our pursuit of it. Did you hear that? The biggest obstacle to our achieving happiness is our pursuit of it. All of the energy being expended, all of the money being expended, all of the resources, all of the emotions, all of that to achieve happiness is actually the obstacle. It's getting in the way of feeling happy. Why? Because what are we doing when we're pursuing happiness? We're thinking about ourselves. At the root, at the core of that pursuit of happiness is our ego, is our self, is me. And guess what's the biggest obstacle to being happy? Me. Caring only about and thinking only about and focusing only about me. Happiness. See, when you talk to God, that's for me. When I'm like God, that's the source of happiness. And so, what researchers have realized, what the Torah, what Judaism has known all along, is that you know what one of the greatest sources of happiness is? Volunteering. And psychologists and social workers are starting to use this now as therapy. Statistics research actually shows that one of the greatest tools to break a cycle of depression is to go volunteer. And not to volunteer at a soup kitchen and say, oh, they have it worse than I do, so I'm not depressed anymore, now I'm happy. You can be volunteering for someone who has it better than you do. But the very act of volunteering, the very act of getting outside yourself, of caring and thinking about others, not yourself, not only fights depression, but it brings happiness. Because happiness comes from being a giver, not from being a taker. We just read last week's Torah portion, the first Torah portion of the whole Torah of the whole Bible. God creates the world. That's for another class. God created the world, evolution, the dating of the universe, that's for another time. But God creates Adam. And Adam is roaming in the garden and he's pretty happy. He's kind of on the couch watching football, drinking a beer, it's all good. He's got everything he needs. And out of nowhere, God says to him, you know, lo tov he'ayos ha'adam levado. It's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to create a helpmate opposite him. And boom, into the garden drops Eve. And now all of a sudden, there goes football. And there goes
the beer.
And there goes a lot of things that Adam liked about being alone. So why did God change his mind? Adam and many men subsequently would argue, God had it right the first time. What was he doing? What's wrong with man being alone? Why is it not good for man to be alone? So the commentators say, because man alone is a taker. Only when he has a helpmate opposite him, when there's another person in his life, or her life, or our life, be it a spouse, a child, a friend, a co-worker, only then do we become a giver, not a taker. And that's what life is all about. Meaning in life, purpose in life, and counterintuitively, happiness in life comes from giving, not taking. So could you imagine? You'll actually be happier if you go to the mall and buy someone else something than you are by buying it for yourself. Being a giver is a greater source of happiness than being a taker. And that's why, I'll tell you another incredible Jewish law. Doing okay on time here, Rabbi? Another unbelievable Jewish law. There's a holiday called Purim. If you're familiar with the holiday of Purim, basically it's like every other Jewish holiday. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. Right? It's like every Jewish holiday, they say. So, this was in Persia, modern day Iran, which unfortunately we're revisiting that cycle now of they tried to kill us. We're so far surviving, it's not yet time to eat. But in Persia, many centuries ago, there was a wicked advisor to the king himself wasn't such a good guy, Haman, Ahasuerus, and they decreed, we're going to destroy the Jews. And the storyline, Queen Esther, gets into the palace, and Mordechai, convinces her to approach Ahasuerus. She pleads on behalf of the Jewish people, and the whole story turns on its head. Haman is the one who's hung on the gallows. Jewish people survive and thrive. Not only that, many in that province actually convert. They want to join the Jewish people. They're so impressed. So that's the story of Purim. We celebrate Purim every year, the Hebrew month of Adar. Usually it's March, April time. So we celebrate Purim. What do? We hear the Megillah, we listen to the story. We actually read the entire narrative, the story of what happened. That's one thing we do. Second thing we do is we have a Purim meal. And at that Purim meal, we have delicious foods and delicious drinks, and it's fantastic. Third thing that we do is we give gifts to the poor. There's an obligation to actually make a charitable donation on that day. The fourth thing that you do is you give what's called Mishloach Manos, you give a gift to your friends. People are just exchanging gifts in the street. It's unbelievable. It's a beautiful thing to see. We dress up in costumes. Some people have a few extra l'chaims. It's a fantastic day. The Rambam Maimonides, who lives in the 12th century, Maimonides says, codifier of Jewish law, says you got a choice. If you've got a limited amount of money, you could either spend that money on having a fancier meal to celebrate Purim. You could have ribs and steak and fancier wine. Or you could take that money and have more to give away to the poor. What should you do? So, come on, all of us inside, you know, want to give the goody answer, so we'll say, you give the extra money to the poor. But listen to the reason Maimonides says why. He says, because you know what the holiday of Purim is all about? It's about happiness. It's about joy. It's about being happy, feeling happy, realizing the happiness of life. He says, you know what's going to give you greater happiness? Not the ribs, the steak, or the better bottle of wine, but giving to the poor. And why will that give you greater happiness? Because at that moment, you're being godlike. At that moment, you are impacting the cosmos, the universe. At that moment, you're changing the world. At that moment, you are a giver, not a taker, and there's no greater happiness than that. So Maimonides says, if you have a choice, then you give to the poor, not for the reason we'd all say, because we're supposed to be noble and altruistic. No, he doesn't say that. He says, you know why? Because you're supposed to be happy. And you know what will bring you the greatest happiness? Being a giver, not a taker. And that's what our life should be all about. Not egotistical, not narcissistic, not focused on ourselves. Because when you're focused on yourself, no matter how badly, no matter how, with what great passion you pursue happiness, you'll never attain it. Because the ego, by definition, gets in the way. But rather, altruism, caring about others, benevolence, kindness, that's what brings happiness. Lubavitcher Rebbe, anyone ever hear of the Lubavitcher Rebbe? Great rabbi in New York who lived in the 20th century. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who many turned to, religious, not religious, Jewish, non-Jewish, politicians, many turned to for advice all the time. They would write him letters. So someone once wrote the Lubavitcher Rebbe a letter. He was in a deep state of depression. And he wrote the following in the letter. The letter said the following. I would like the Rebbe's help. I wake up each day sad and apprehensive. I can't concentrate. I find it hard to pray. I keep the commandments, but I find no spiritual satisfaction. I go to the synagogue, but I feel alone. I begin to wonder what life is about. I need help. So Lubavitcher Rebbe, this great rabbi, wrote him back a brilliant response that did not even use a single word. How do you write a response that doesn't have a single word? Lubavitcher Rebbe did one thing. He took his pen and he circled the first word of every sentence in the letter and he sent it back. And the disciple understood. The message came across. The source of his depression was because every single sentence of his letter began with the word I. And if your life, every sentence of your life begins with the word I, you'll never be happy. Happiness is from being a giver, not a taker. It comes from being selfless, not selfish. It comes from caring about others in the world. Number three. And by the way, the last thing for number two, just like number one is, it's in your control then to be happy. You see, if happiness comes from getting, you can't control what you get. So you can never control your happiness. But if happiness comes from giving, you're always in control of what you can give, how much you can volunteer, how much you can care. And therefore, you control your own happiness. Okay, number three, last. So, this past summer, I had an incredible opportunity. I can only say this on this recording if my mother won't listen to it. My mother couldn't even hear about this after the fact. So everyone has a bucket list, things you want to do before you kick the bucket. So on my bucket list, for some strange reason, I wanted to go skydiving. I wanted to jump out of an airplane. And I only wanted to do it in one place in the world, and that was in the land of Israel. And my last few trips to Israel, I wasn't able to arrange for skydiving until this past summer. I was there with my wife and kids for the summer in Israel, working, teaching, studying. And one day I told her, I said, I have a great day planned for us, for the kids up in Zichron Yaakov. I just got to make a quick stop on the way. Okay, so we make a quick stop. And we come to Paradive on the beach right near Zichron Yaakov, the north of Israel. And after a whopping 5-minute training session. So I'm wearing my whole gear. I got the funny hat on. I got the goggles on. And I get into this airplane that if you weren't crazy for the fact that you were about to jump out of it, you're out of your mind for the fact that you're willing to step into it. It's more like a tin box than an airplane. It's got propellers. It's making funny noises. There's no chairs. You just climb in. You find a place to sit on the floor of the airplane. It takes off. Climbing. 20 minutes, half an hour. We're at 12,000 feet. Now, do you know what 12,000 feet is? 12,000 feet high. 12,000 feet is when you're landing and they say, you know, we started our descent and you're landing and you look down and everything looks like a big blur. That's 12,000 feet. So it's my turn to jump. And I come and I get to they open the door to the side of the airplane, and I come and I'm sitting off the side of the airplane. My legs are dangling off the airplane. And I look down and I realize I am out of my mind. This is insane. You literally realize I'm hanging out of an airplane. So when you were a little kid sitting in a normal airplane and you thought, if I punched out this window and I stuck my hand out, wouldn't that be cool? Here I'm at 12,000 feet sitting looking outside of, I was out of my mind. But before I could make any change of heart and climb back in, boom, little nudge. And there I was. So I'm now falling headfirst towards Mother Earth. I'm going literally 98 miles an hour. 98 miles an hour? There, it's just me and air and the globe down there and just heading towards Earth. It's an unbelievable rush. The wind is passing you by and you can feel everything and you can't breathe. You could taste your kidneys. It's unbelievable. So I had this moment of panic. This unbelievable moment of panic. Oh my God, I just jumped out of an airplane. I was 12,000 feet. I'm going 100 miles an hour. This is insane. I had this incredible moment of panic where I literally couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe for a few seconds. And then I remembered something. I remembered that attached to me, no, not to pull the string, I remembered that attached to me through a few metal buckles and straps was a big Israeli man who teaches paratroopers in the Israeli army and who jumps out of a plane 8 to 10 times a day. You guys don't think I'm crazy, I was going to jump without being attached to somebody. This was a tandem jump. So all of a sudden I remember. There's a guy who knows what he's doing who has my back. And at that moment, I realized, don't worry. Enjoy the ride. At the moment that I thought, there's someone who knows what he's doing who has my back, I was able to let go and start to enjoy the rest of the ride. Now you go 6,000 feet in 45 seconds, and then my big Israeli friend pulled the cord. Thank God, parachute open, and take the goggles off, and it takes about 8 to 10 minutes to go the next 6,000 feet, where you glide in the most peaceful, tranquil, serene that you could ever experience in your life. He let me take control of the parachute. Went to the left, went out over the ocean a little bit, came back over land. He showed me as we descended, there's Haifa, there's Tzfat, there's the Carmel Forest, there's Jerusalem, there's Tel Aviv. It was unbelievable. I gave Israel a great big hug from the sky. It was unbelievable peaceful. It was incredible. It was the most extraordinary experience. And you know what made it from the most panic-stricken experience to the most extraordinary experience? Letting go. Realizing there's someone who knows what he's doing, who has my back. Let go. Let go. There's an expression that I heard from a friend of mine, his father used to use, and I've learned since is a popular expression. The expression is, let go, let God. Let go and let God. Because you see, we go through life dangling off the side of a plane, and we're so nervous. What's going to be with my house? What's going to be with my paycheck? What's going to be with my life? What's going to be with marriage? What's going to be with having a child? What's going to be with my grandchildren? What's going to be with my health? What's going to be with a million things? And we're nervous, and we're panic-stricken, and we're miserable, and we're upset, and we're depressed. And we can't achieve happiness because we're so stressed out. And so the answer is, let go and let God and enjoy the ride. Life is an extraordinary ride. And there's so much to be happy about. And don't let the stress and anxiety get in the way of that happiness. We just concluded the holiday of Sukkot, of Sukkot. I shared these words with the synagogue over the holiday of Sukkot because what do? We leave our permanent structure of a home in the holiday of Sukkot and we go out to this temporary flimsy booth which is constructed by definition out of something that's impermanent and unstable. If your sukkah is too stable, if the roof is too permanent, it's not a legitimate, valid sukkah according to Jewish law. To be a legitimate sukkah, it's got to be flimsy, unstable, temporary, impermanent, and one big gust of wind could blow you away in it. Yep. And yet for 7 days, we leave our home, and we go sit in there. Why? And the answer is, for 7 days, we let go and we let God. We subject ourselves to the elements. We expose ourselves to the world, and we say, God, I'm letting go, I'm trusting you, and I'm going to enjoy the ride. The third secret for happiness is to let go. Stop worrying. Stop being filled with stress. You see, the worry we have about ourselves, that's legitimate worry. If I'm worried that I'm going to perform, I'm worried that I'm going to execute, I'm worried that I'm going to do what I need to do, that's okay. But to worry about things that are outside of my control, things that I can't impact no matter what I do, all I'm doing is taking away my own chance at happiness. To worry about my health, to worry about what will be, to worry about the future, to worry about someone else, to worry about things outside of my control accomplishes one and only one thing. It is an obstacle to my being happy. So we have to let go and let God and finally be able to achieve happiness. So we talked about tonight is the ability to both be happy and successful. And I shared of many, many, many more, but three suggestions, three insights, three lessons into happiness. The first is that happiness is not an emotion, it's a decision. Starting tonight, decide to be happy. Starting tonight, achieve the greatest blessing, and that is seeing the blessings. Focus on what you have, not what you don't have. Be happy based on what we have, not based on what we don't have. Make the decision to be happy. Exude happiness. Exhibit happiness. Live happy. Put a smile on your face. You know, your face, the rabbis teach, is public property. It's not yours. You can't look so downtrodden, miserable, angry. It's public property. It's a public thoroughfare, your face. And because it is, put a smile on it. And when you share that smile, it's going to be contagious. It's going to impact you and it's going to impact others. Make the decision to be happy. Number two. What was number two? Number two is that happiness comes from giving, not taking. Happiness comes from caring about others, not ourselves. Happiness comes by tapping into the greatest blessing in the world, and that is God. Abraham chose to imitate God rather than to talk to God. And number three is let go, let God. Put down that bundle. Put down those worries. You know, a professor once stood in the front of a classroom and he picked up a beaker of water. And he said to the class, how much does this beaker weigh? So one of the students said, 3 ounces. Another said, 11 ounces, a pound and a half. So the professor said, you're all right. He said, you're all right. How could you all be right? They're saying different answers. Only one of them could be right. So listen to what the professor said. He said, you're all right. It depends how long I hold on to it. Because the longer I hold on to it, the heavier it gets. The longer we hold on to anger, to worry, to anxiety, to fear. The longer we hold on to it, the heavier it becomes, and the more it weighs us down, and the less possibility and potential we have to achieve happiness. So put it down. Just put it down already, and enjoy the ride. May we all achieve great happiness in a sweet year ahead. Thank you.